Radio Live with your hosts, Jim and Sandy Young. Welcome, everyone. I am Reverend Sandy.
And I am Reverend Jim.
Welcome to Angel Talk Radio Live. Our show is sponsored by the Living Light Center, a church of faith and healing. For anyone interested, Jim and I do personal readings. And if you'd like to have a personal reading, you can call 304-567-3354 or email sandysangeltalk@aol.com. That's sandysangeltalk@aol.com. Welcome, everyone, to Angel Talk. Our show today is going to be, I Didn't Know. You know, are you seeking light, love, and peace that can overflow through you like endless rivers? Have you been seeking to achieve God's promises, but they always seem to elude you? God is asking all to do one thing, to receive these promises. The heavens are opening for you to receive them now. So join us for another exciting Angel Talk radio show sponsored by the Living Light Center, a church of faith and healing.
Sandy, it's interesting. Just let me say one thing before you start. A lot of this was precipitated to do the show today on this subject because you asked a man the other day when we were having the oil change in the car, you know, that said he was, first he said he was atheist, then he said he was agnostic. And, you know, and he kind of stood up, you know, and he kind of looked at us. He was not mean or anything, but he was just, you know, you could see something else. And you asked him, you said, what is it that you're looking for? And the things he said he was looking for are the very things that you can only get from God. And, you know, I thought that was a very wise choice of words to use with this gentleman. And I told him, I said, I kind of like agnostics and atheists because they're the easiest individuals to talk to because they are haven't gone through 40 years of indoctrination, you know, by different, you know, different preachers or, you know, or different teachings, and you have to unwind some of them or break them down with an agnostic or an atheist. You start over from ground one. And he just kind of looked at me. I even said that to him, and he kind of looked at me, you know, like,
yeah,
okay.
I know.
You know, he'd never heard somebody say that to him before when he said he was agnostic. He expected, you know, like most preachers, to say, well, you're going to burn in hell. And, you know, that's not where we come from. It's not what we do, and it's not who we are. And, you know, again, for me, it's easier, you know, because I don't have to unwind at all.
Yeah. All right. Let me share a little prophecy here with you. Prepare yourself for a lot of earth changes on the planet this year. This year of 2025, plate movements will be significant, and with it will come problems with methane, loud grinding noises, broken pipelines, and nauseous smells. The bacteria that haven't been to the surface for a very long time will cause more illnesses in people and animals from these plate movements. Then, with the sun at its solar maximum, expect larger coronal mass ejections and solar winds. Radiation will increase, so one must protect themselves as best as possible. The amount of cancer and illnesses will increase. Even people who thought they were very healthy will still be vulnerable. Medications may become limited with so many people sick. Large meteors are coming to the planet and will increase. Soon, more will make their way into the planet. More lightning strikes are going to happen on the planet. You'll see regions that will have enormous amounts of lightning. The tilt of the planet is swinging to 31 degrees, and it seems to rotate back and forth due to a significant magnetic force influence, and is continuing to weaken the poles of the planet. Winds, rain, snow, and ice will continue to increase from last year's amount. crops this year will produce less, leaving less food at the grocery stores for purchase. It is most important to pray, to quiet your mind and ask God for guidance, rather than just relying on what people say. Learn to connect with the oneness of God. Trust and have faith. You will be guided properly. Blessings to you.
You know, I want to make a few predictions of my own. And one of those is that there is coming 964 to the 10th power of ton miles of torque that is going to occur on the crust of the Earth, creating almost a ratcheting effect. And that is going to cause a separation of the Earth's tectonic plates. And so we're going to see more and more. It's already occurring even now. But, you know, that jumping that is causing the tilt change. And actually, I didn't tell you this, Andy, but, you know, I always watch some news at 3 in the morning. Not that I, you know, not that I give much credit to mass media, except, you know, what I hear on this show and on BBS. But, you know, on Fox News and those places, I mean, sorry to say, you know, I don't give a whole lot of credit to what I hear or what I see, but they're already talking about a 31-degree tilt, believe it or not. And that just amazed me. And I hadn't had a chance to tell you, but it was just the other night.
Mm-hmm.
And they also showed two moons, a picture of two moons. And this is NASA now. And NASA says, we have identified this extra moon. And they showed a picture of it, and our moon's up there, and there's this other one up there, too. And they're about the same size. They say, we now have two moons in our system. And it's like, and then they went on to something else. And I thought, hey, wait, you can't stop there. I mean, so how does that affect things? What does it do? I mean, you know, there's more to that. Why did they announce that and not go into it? I mean, I was just amazed. But 964 to the 10th power of ton miles of torque on the crust of our Earth. You know, when we get certain prophecies, one of them stood out really far, and that was that, you know, creation is a circle or a cycle or a series of cycles, and where we started is where we will end. And it doesn't end. Any ending is a beginning. And they even told us that, you know, there will come a time when there are 8 days in a week, not seven. You know, and I thought, well, my wife will like that because she likes the number eight. But, you know, but 8 days in a week. And I thought, wasn't there a Beatles song, you know, 8 days a week? Maybe they do something we didn't. But there will be 8 days in a week, and we will, again, we have to go back to where we started. It goes in a round, you know, and as you go down, you know, and then you go back up, and then it creates the, what do they call it, the infinity symbol?
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully your consciousness or your ability to understand things rises up into that second cycle. And, you know, creation never ends. I mean, God in movement is creation. Without movement, there is no creation. And that's even for us, too. You know, we were told that, you know, it's very necessary for us to have movement. And in our movement, you are expressing your faith because you can talk about it all day long. And, you know, people may listen. Some may. Others might not. You know, they have their own, you know, beliefs that they have had for all their life. But it's example. When you are the example of what you're talking about, and I learned this young, very young, about the age of six, you know, I began to learn that what you did and how you did it and people could see it, they would always question it. You know, why are you doing that? You know, I mean, and I realized, forgive me, God, because I didn't know then, but, you know, as time went on, I began to realize that, you know, they weren't asking because they really wanted to try it out. They were questioning me because, why are you trying to change something? You know, why don't you just accept the way it is? And that has never been me from the age of six on up. But it's a hard mandate, and I understand that. It's a hard mandate to follow because to be the example, you have to walk it. And if you're going to do the talk, you better walk the walk. And, you know, and that's been proven to me over and over and over and over again. But you know what? When you get to be a certain age, I mean, you know, am I still having to move forward and walk? Yes. That will never end. You will never retire completely. You know, I mean, were the words. And I thought, oh, my golly, I'd just like to have a cabin on a mountain somewhere and a rocker on the front porch. Believe me, that sounds good. But you know what? I don't think that's ever going to happen as much as I'd like to have it. You know, where we sat is at the base of it. I mean, a massive mountain of crystal, two types of crystal, and limestone. And it's got a 17-mile underground lake under the mountain that is vertical. 17 miles. Now, just in your mind, imagine that. And it's full of water. I mean, sealed in granite. So the amount of light and energy that comes in and out of that mountain is just beyond imagination. I've seen people that we've gone over there with that were on crutches, and they left them at the bottom, and they were able to walk up the paths all the way around to the very top, and, you know, without much trouble. And yet they came with crutches. But when they came back down and they were ready to walk across the river that surrounds it and runs north, they had to pick back up the crutches, because once you walk back onto the other side of the river, it changes back to a denser feeling. And so, you know, it was something that they had to ponder. And, you know, and that is how God works, you know. And you can only know it if you walk it and experience it. Otherwise, you can speak about it, but you don't really know it. And so, you know, forgive me, God, you know, because I didn't know. I drank water when I was 6 years old, 10 years old. I mean, I drank water, maybe not the best, but I've spent a lot of time in the woods. And there were always springs, and the water was cool. And so I drank the water, and I never once said, thank you, God, for supplying me with this wonderful water. Why? I mean, you know, at that age, you just accepted it was there, and you drank it. But, you know, don't think anything is a coincidence in your life. If you get something that comes at the last hour or the, you know, ID at the last minute, and or, you know, it just seems that it's different than it is coming out of your spigot. You know, chances are that God's in it, and it makes the difference. But when you're young, you know, forgive me, God, I didn't know. I didn't know walking in the woods. I spent all my time in the woods. Why? Well, from my remembrances, it was peaceful. It was just a different energy about the woods and the streams and the animals that ran through it. I mean, and, you know, when you were living in a town, well, you could tell the difference. I mean, the people that moved about, many of them had ideas and places they were going, and, you know, and those energies were everywhere. But in the woods, you know, man is the only creation of God that is able to defy its own creator. Nature walks in the way and in the path and the will of God and how it was created and what it was created for. And there's harmony even in, you know, the wolf eating the rabbit, the hierarchy of nature. You know, I began to realize that it's okay. It has a hierarchy, and it understands it, and it knows it. And that's the way it was created. And forgive me, God, I didn't understand, you know, what I should have about nature. It supplies our food. You know, how often do we really, we may give a blessing to God, but how often do we really look at nature and go, wow, I mean, look what it has given us, and never ask us to say thanks.
That's exactly right. That's true. And with the water, it's so true. You know, when you're a child, you don't know, you know, and you don't treat the water as though it's important. It's just liquid that you can drink to hydrate yourself. You don't understand the healing qualities that it has, the structure that it's made up of, until Emoto does his discovery of the snowflake shapes of the molecules and all that, you know, in the water, and how it acts upon the cells of the body, and causes purification and, you know, and it gives you life force and energy.
Well, you're talking about the fact that it's fractal.
Right, exactly.
And that a snowflake is shaped the way it is so that it can penetrate, you know, whatever it needs to bring that sustenance to it. Mm. And if you speak badly, you know, or negatively, then it affects the water in your own body.
Right.
And it turns it into, they've proven scientifically.
Somatics, yeah.
Yeah, it almost looks like mud.
It does.
And yet, when you speak kindly of people, or you speak, you know, the words of God that are taught to you, then the water takes on a shape that's very similar to the snowflake.
And it has consciousness.
Yes, and it has points, too, so it can penetrate the cells of the body.
Right. And the fact that, you know, water can go from being liquid to steam to frozen, yeah, we don't understand the extensiveness of the water. And it's like you just say, I didn't know. And you just say, forgive me, God. You know, I didn't know.
And if we did at that age, it would have been much better, I think. But, you know, the water, there is nothing that is alive that has not been born from the water.
Exactly.
Everything passes through the water.
Right. You know? And as a child, you were much more aware than I was as a child. You know, I pretty much still believe most everything my parents taught me, you know? Even to the extent when I was really small, I watched the Pinocchio movie, and they would say to me, if you lie to me, if you're not telling me the truth, your nose is going to grow. You know? And it's like, oh, can't have that.
You can't have a nose a foot long, right? You know?
Yeah.
And it's just odd that, you know, what we believed because they told us that. And did they believe it? I mean, what did we say back to them? Oh, so you lied to me last week. I don't see your nose any bigger. You know, does it only work on kids?
Yeah, right.
I think I can remember my mother saying, don't you think about what I do. You do what I say.
Right.
You know, and I thought, well, that's not much of an example. But, you know, I was a little more rebel than you were, even at the age of six.
Yeah. So we say, you know, forgive me, God, because I believed everything they told me. I was so young, I didn't know different, you know. But we get hung up on things, you know. There is patterns that your parents have that's like, you know, you got to get a good education, you got to work really hard, you got to apply yourself so you're the best at the company, you got to get a job that makes lots of money, and you got to just give it your all. Well, yeah, I agree. It's important to do that. But sometimes it's kind of like put into you to overkill on this. And sure enough, you know, with myself, you know, yeah, I got a good job in an engineering company, you know, but I should have known that there was never going to be a 40-hour week at this company, that it was always going to have to be overtime. And a lot of times it was mandatory. But, you know, once the paycheck comes in and you see this extra money, it's like, oh, this is sweet, you know? And then you get hooked on it. It's like you get so indulged in the material things. Well, I want a new car, and now I want to buy a house, and now I want to take a big vacation, and now I want to buy all these belongings and all this nice jewelry. And, you know, and before you know it, you have indebted yourself so much that you have to work all this overtime just to pay for everything that you want. And what happens is that you lose connections to spending time with your family, spending time with your friends, doing your spiritual work and studies. You know, all it's about is the almighty dollar.
And what's it say on the dollar?
Yeah.
In God we trust, right?
Exactly.
You know, what God, though?
Yeah.
They don't tell you which one, or you know, that it's the almighty or it's the high God, I mean, you know, or the one God, they tell you it's just God. And, you know, even the Ten Commandments say, thou shalt have no other gods before you. So, you know, even there it was recognized that there were those that will claim to be gods, and they put it on the money.
Right, and the false ones will lead you to believe that money is the answer to all your problems, but really, the love of money is really the root of evil.
Well, it's the love of money, though.
Right, the
you
love.
Know, the money itself is just a piece of paper.
Right.
It really doesn't even have any value.
Right.
Except that when you begin to desire it so badly that it becomes almost a carnal ambition, then those false beings, we'll call them, you know, they actually can convince you that, oh, no, this is, you have no idea how valuable this is. And what they're really doing is they're taking your light. It's one way to get the light that you have within you that you're supposed to have. And you've worked hard to gain that too, probably. But you know what? Everything that is material can be used against you. You know, God's love and light, you know, and will lead you through the deserts of life, if that's necessary, or in daily life. And it will provide for you what you need, most likely at the last hour, you know, because otherwise obstacles will be placed in front of you to keep you from getting it.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So it usually comes at the 11th hour, what you pray for. Are you patient enough to wait for it?
Exactly.
And so it becomes a matter of, with family, you know, they work so hard to make sure that you don't change anything. Why? Because when you change anything that has been in the patterns, then every member of your immediate family will have to examine their own life and their own truth to make sure that, you did it right. And you know, nobody wants to do that. But you become 50 years old or 60 years old or whatever age it may be, you know, I have found that with my family, they didn't want to look back. They didn't want to go back and look, did I do it right? I mean, is that really the right way to do it, or is there a better way? Me, all my life, I have looked for the best way, or sometimes maybe even the easiest way. And I don't know that that's good or bad, but I didn't just accept that the way you did it looks pretty hard, you know, and you didn't have a weed eater. So if you want me to go out there and cut that with a pair of hand scissors, I'm sorry, you know, there's a weed eater now, you know. But how often did that stuff break right out of the box?
Yeah.
You know, and you get angry or you get upset, and you know what? There went your light, the piece of light that goes with it. And everything that you gain from the false ones, you know, a piece of it is taken back, if not all of it. The pendulum swings when you get something and you go, ah, I've always wanted that. And here comes the pendulum back and whoosh, it takes it right away from you. And oftentimes, it takes a little more than you gained.
Yeah.
And you go, oh, my goodness, how'd that happen? I must have done something wrong. That's why there's 6.5 billion, so say the angels, 6.5 billion people on the planet, because they have had to take more and more and more light, because they don't have light of their own to survive on. So the only way they can get it is to trick you into letting go of some of yours. And now you have a whole bottom class that really they pretty much suck dry. And so, you know, now they want, what do we do with them? I mean, they're more of a burden than they are a help, is the way I think they look at it. Mm-hmm. And they're not going to want to look back, even our parents, and say, we did that wrong, let's do it right. You know, they say, no. If we did it, it had to be right. You know,
yeah.
So you do it too. And it's like, really, you want me to have to go through all the things that you did? That you really felt like at times that it was just going to, you know, bury you. I mean, there's God's offering another way, you know, but my mom used to say, I want you to be a preacher. That's what I want for your life. But I don't want you to preach to me. You know, I mean, you know, she was adamant. That only made it worse.
Exactly.
And was she a little bit racist? Yes. And I called her out on it, you know. And when I did, she'd say, never mind. She goes, because I know if I tell you not to do something, you're just going to go out and do it.
Right.
Anyway. So, and so she soon learned that, but.
I know.
But,
well, with my parents, it was like competition. It's like if you were really going to make a name for yourself, well, you had to go out there and you had to win at things. You know, you had to, if you're going to go into sports, you had to be the winner of the sports. If you're going to play games, even if you went to a fair, you had to win at the games that you went to the fair for. You know, it was all about competition and being the best.
And I'm sorry to say that with my parents, the only thing I remember my mother ever showing up for was when I was indoctrinated into the National Honor Society in high school. You know, I made that. And, mm-hmm. But the reason why she showed up was because she took credit for it. Well, I must have done something right, she said. You know, because I have three children, all of them made it. You know,
yeah.
So she had to show up because she took the credit for it. Well, I don't even remember her ever looking at my report cards to see if I was doing what I was supposed to.
Yeah. Well, you know, with the idea of having to win at everything, you know, it doesn't usually stop just at childhood. You know, that kind of a pattern. You know, if you don't focus on God and start to realize that, you know, everybody is good at things, that, you know, you don't have to always be the winner of everything. Sometimes it's even better if other people have their moment of glory, you know. But, you know, you get more of you get an ego from it. And, you know, and I think this happens a lot of times is that, yeah, it's good to be good at whatever that you're doing, but you have to be conscious of other people's feelings and their talents,
well,
too.
Well, you have both teams in a basketball game, and I remember I played basketball. I played baseball. We only had two, you know, two sports, and our school was very little, 25 people in my graduating class, so that gives you an idea. But we only had two sports. I did both of them. I played band. Nobody had played the tuba in 20 years. I picked up the tuba, and I learned how to play it. And trust me, I got good at it enough that I could do solos, or I got in competitions that I had to travel to, and I remember the tuba our school had, right? And I just didn't think about it. Forgive me, God, for I didn't know. But as I'm sitting in the back with, you know, 150 other people from around the world, and were doing, you know, music that was written by, you know, Sousa, the man who invented the sousaphone, or the tuba that you use when you, you know, are in a band, or, you know, or when you were marching. And I'll never forget him saying, you in the back. And I stood up, and I said, me, you're talking about? And he said, yes. And he said, I want everybody to look at that man's tuba. And they did, or child's tuba. I was only probably 14 or 15. And he said, look at that tuba. And everybody turned around and looked. I had all these eyes on me. And he said, that's what you don't want to do to your tuba. Do not ever treat your tuba that way. And I thought, that was the first time I realized that the tuba I had been painted five times, and it had dents all over it because that's all my school could afford, you know. And all of a sudden, it hit me, you know. But it was forgive me, God, for I didn't know. But you know what? I played that tuba like it was a part of me. I mean, it sang, or I couldn't have made it there for him to be able to say those words. But it shows you the world doesn't see things the way God does, you know. He looked at it and said, that's not how you treat your tuba, you know. I didn't realize it was even painted five times until, you know, he said something. But you know what? From that moment on, I never played that tuba again. The music instructor, he mastered in tuba, so he brought his in, and he let me use it. But it was four key. I was used to three, but I could play it. I didn't look at that age at things that were bad or off or, you know. I mean, I'd been embarrassed had I realized my tuba didn't look, you know, it looked like I had thrown it down a flight of steps way too many times.
Yeah.
But it still, it sang, you could hear it. And I'd have people come up to me and say, oh, I never knew a tuba could do that. And, you know, everything I did, I made sure I tried to do right. But I didn't always do right, but my family didn't have the competitive edge that yours did. My family was like, don't do more than I did because, you know what, you don't need to be thinking you're all that. And, I mean, when I went and I sat with the vice president of Liberia and at a table, a round table, and the only other guy that was with me was with the government. I was not. And I went there to propose our water when we did the water you know, yeah, the purification for the water. And we used our own money and did a mission out of it. But it wasn't what I thought I was going into. What I walked into was, you know, a country that had just declared martial law. You know, it was a radical country. And the Western governments had just installed a new government, put the president in prison, and I had to walk over dead bodies to get to the airport. And then from there to get into the hotel. And, I mean, I thought, who am I to talk to about water now? you know, and come to realize that
that's not why I was there.
But you see, God didn't tell me ahead of time. So by then, I had learned. God, I didn't know, but all of a sudden I got to a place where, you know, just let it go and let the river of life and love take you. And the guy I was with was a very high-ranking individual and, you know, with the government. But you know who was sitting at the front seat with the vice president of Liberia? It was me. He was way in the back, and that's where they put him. And when I went to see the embassy personnel, the head embassy, you know, he was in the back. They put him in a corner, and I was sitting in the front chair. And, you know, the embassy security said, this is your job. What do you want to do? And I thought, I'm here to promote a water purification, you know. And he said, well, that's not what happened. He said, so, you know, you want to keep going? And I said, well, whatever God wants me to do. And so I felt like that was the right thing to do. And, you know, and then that's when all of a sudden, with our driver, I ended up in a slum that literally had pieces of tin nailed together. And when they opened the door, and it was part French-speaking country, they opened the door, there was a mattress inside. And laying on the mattress was a baby. And I looked in there, and everybody had said, don't go in that slum. Whatever you do, do not go in there. Well, you know me. I go wherever anybody tells me not to go. You know, that's where I show up. You know, and I thought, God wants me in there. I'm going. And the driver of the cab said, I'm going to back out, and I'll wait for you at the end of the alley, and when you're ready, just wave your hands, but I'm not going in there and staying. You can stay if you want, but I'm telling you, you're not allowed in there. Okay, just thanks. I'll yell for you in about 20 minutes. So we took her home, and when the door opened, there was that baby. I mean, that baby was just, I mean, I knew something very unusual here. I mean, how often, what's the chances there's a baby on a mattress in a place that's tin nailed together, and there's no running water, no toilet, no nothing. And the mother was there. She was the sister to our interpreter. And so I said to her, I said, can I pick up the baby? She said, well, no, the baby doesn't allow anyone to pick it up. I said, really? She goes, no, it will kick and scream. I mean, it'll scratch. Nobody could pick up the baby except the mother. I said, can I try? And she said, well, okay, go ahead. You can try, but I'm warning you. So I picked up the baby, and I tell you what, our foreheads touched, and I looked into that baby's eyes, and I could see the world. I could see the universe. I mean, there was something very special about this baby. And I looked at it. It had two umbilical cords. It had a rope wrapped around its right ankle and a little frayed. It was tied like a rope, but it wasn't. It was a birthmark. And I looked at the baby, and I held it, and I walked around with the baby for probably 15 or 20 minutes. And then I noticed that all the people in all the other slum, you know, houses, the little shacks that were nailed together, they started coming out of those places, and they started walking towards me. And it, all of a sudden, it was like, I'm sorry, God, I didn't know, you know. And it was like there was a peace that came over me that was like, it's okay. And as they got closer, I realized they were in those shacks to protect that baby. And so as the mother was watching me hold the baby, I told her what I thought the markings meant. And she said, well, that's pretty much what the elders of the village told me when the baby was born. And so I gave her back the baby, didn't want to, but I did, and went back to my hotel and with this government person. And all of a sudden the phone rings. And it's the attaché and the chief of staff to the vice president of a West African country. And he was in that country for medical tests and had rented out an entire hotel in downtown and wanted to know, the chief of staff wanted to know if I could meet with him the next day. And I mean, it's like, you know, I'm nobody. I'm honestly, I don't know what you've been told, but I'm a country boy from West Virginia. You know, I mean, really, I'm a country boy. And they insisted, can you please meet with him tomorrow? So I had to go buy a suit the next morning before I even went, because I didn't take one with me. So I went and had to go through the security and led into this huge room with a small round table in the middle and seats. And they said, no, you sit here. And so I sat where it was towards the front. And they put the other guy in the back And an empty chair was right in front of me, a foot away, and that was where the vice president would sit. And when he walked into the room, you knew you were in the presence of a vice president. And, you know, I stood up, and he walked over, and he said, "It's okay." He said, "I'm here for a medical test." And I looked at him, and I said, "Well, they're going to come out fine. You're in good health." I said, "And, you know, I'm hearing something else, that you're going to take over the presidency of your country without any violence." I said, "But it will be interim, and you will usher in the presence of the first elected female president of a West African country." And it just spouted out, and as it sometimes does with me, you know. And, And, you know, he kind of looked surprised at me, but he said, "Well, thank you for the information." Absolutely. You know, only time will tell. And you had to be in the will of God, you know, and not doubt yourself, because who tells a vice president those kinds of things? And he sat down, and we started talking, and he said, "My biggest problem, I've got 4 growing seasons, and the food rots on the ground because we can't ship it out. Because the people in the countries around us that have customs, they steal most of it before it even gets past customs." And I thought, you know, I guess, you know, forgive me, Lord, because, you know, I really wasn't as aware of the world itself, you know, and its intricacies as I should have been. But the door opened up, and in walks the mother with the baby. She walks over to me, and she hands me the baby. Again, you know, I look at the baby, and I thought, there's more here. Forgive me, God. I didn't know. I mean, you know, or maybe I could have done more. But she hands me the baby, and I set the baby on my knee, and she leaves. And you could tell the vice president's looking at me. I mean, intently. You know, at the baby, really. And me, this white boy from West Virginia, you know, I mean, with a baby that, you know, I find out later, he knew, everybody knew, that nobody could hold that baby. But a white boy from West Virginia could. And so he's looking at the baby, he's looking at me. And I give him all I knew to say that God had given me to build a turbine, a windmill, an African turbine, you should call it. I said, and build a building and put one at each end of the building. I said, because there's a lot of wind in your country along the coastlines, and you don't have the infrastructure of electricity. I said, but that will create a building that will remain cool enough, and, you know, you control it enough that it will preserve your food long enough for you to, you know, sell it or do whatever you need to do with it. I said, and I can even give you a schematic for a tank that you can put it in that will top off with nitrogen. And when people tap the tank for the juice, I said, it'll be 10 years. It'll last 10 years because the nitrogen expands. And he looked at me, and all of a sudden the phone rang. And he got up. I got up with the baby in my arms. And he walks over to a satellite phone, and he's talking to the president of the country. And you could tell they were talking about the baby. And I was like, God, I'm sorry. I didn't know. I mean, I'd have been better prepared. I'd have brought a nice suit, nicer suit. I mean, I would have, you know, I would have had something, you know, very dramatic to say. But, you know, I wasn't meant to. I mean, what I needed, God gave me. I let my will fall within God's will. And all of a sudden, things I needed to say, I did. And so he comes back to the table. I get back up, baby in my arms. And he sits back down. I sit back down. He's still looking at the baby. And he says, "You want to do business in my country?" I said, "Sure." He said, "Well, here's my card." And he writes his home phone number and his cell phone number on the back. And he says, "If you decide what you're going to want to do in my country, you call me. I call the minister in charge of it, and I say, do it." He says, "And that's the red tape you have to go through." I thought, when God works in big ways and quick ways and in ways that if you had to go through, you know, the typical agency levels, I mean, you're not going to find that those things happen. And I knew it. And again, so he stands up, I stand up, baby in my arms, and he leaves. And when I walk out into the hallway, I see the mother down at the end of it. And I walk down, and I say, "Okay, give me the story." The baby was the vice president, or the vice president was the cousin to the baby. And the baby had been the cousin to the former vice president who had died in battle. They were in the Civil War. And so everybody knew this baby was unique. They knew the markings. And someday, the baby would become an anchor for the entire continent of Africa, I was told by, you know, in meditation and through prayer, by God. And it was also given to me in other ways, too, that were from material things but or people, but what mattered was what God said. And believe it or not, you know, forgive me, God, for even doubting for a minute that, you know, this white country boy could do what happened. And I saw an individual late night on TV, and he was just about the right age, because that was 20 years ago, and he was 24 years ago, and that was just about the right age, and he was talking about issues and ways to unify the continent of Africa instead of separate states. And I was in awe and amazement, and I think, that's the baby, you know? And, you know, what if I hadn't have made that trip down there? I mean, or if I'd have got scared and said, look, I'm not a diplomat. But instead, all it really did was just make the guy in the back mad, because he should have been the one at the front, he thought, instead of me. So he started accusing me of being working for something that, you know, he didn't know about. And he asked to go out, let's go out and have a drink. I said, I don't drink. He said, well, have a Coke. Fine. And he opens up the book to the yellow pages, and he says, pick a place. And I turned my head the other way, and I stuck my finger on the page. And I said, there it is. And he said, he looked at it, and he goes, that's where you want to go? You said pick a place. I just turned my head the other way and picked the place. You know, that way, God was picking the place. And so when we went there, you know, oh, they sent girl after girl after girl after him, you know, to hit on him. And he would rebuff it, but I didn't even think about it. Forgive me, God, for not realizing at the moment, you know, had nothing to do with I'm the one maybe is nice looking as him or whatever. It had to do with the fact that, you know, they couldn't even see who I was or what I was there for. And I didn't see what I was there for. And so we went to the place, and they tried their best to get on his good side. Finally, though, we left. And when we left, two guys followed us with submachine guns. And they kept getting faster and faster and faster. And I got faster and faster and faster. And all of a sudden, I said, follow me. And I went down three concrete steps, and it was a glass door there. And I opened it up, and we both went in, and it led around to the front of a hotel. Now, in that country, after dark, there are no unlocked doors, ever, anywhere. You know, it's impossible. But otherwise, we would never have been able to have evaded, you know, those two guys with machine guns. And he looked at me and he said, okay, it's over. He said, who are you? You know that door was unlocked. I said, no, I didn't. He said, you walked down the steps and told me to follow you and you opened the door. I said, yes, I did. He said, so you had to have known the door would be unlocked for you. No, I didn't. You know, he said, I'm sorry. He said, but you work for an agency. What's the name of what's the letters of the agency? Okay, you got me. Here it is, AIA. He said, oh, is part of the, you know, the alphabet agencies? I said, well, no. I said, AIA, Angelic Intelligence Agency. I said, well, trust me, whatever you know, they know.
Yeah, that's a pretty interesting story.
Well,
that's really amazing. Yeah,
but it's God.
Following God's will and going in the right direction saved your life.
Exactly. And you know what? It was part of my learning experiences throughout life. I mean, I can remember crossing the street, four lanes, and three lanes were 20 cars backed up waiting for the light to change. And as I got to the last lane, it was the lane that you could come down and turn right on a red light. But, of course, you had to stop, you know. But whoever was driving didn't see it that way. And I couldn't see it because of the automobiles that were, you know, backed up. And so I was in the crosswalk, and I went to take a step out into that lane to get to the sidewalk, and I felt a hand on my chest. I mean, a heavy hand. And it stopped me. I mean, it wouldn't let me move. And right by me came a car driving about 40 miles an hour and screeched around that corner, and away it went. And I thought, oh, my goodness gracious, if I'd have stepped out there, you know, we wouldn't be on this radio show today. You know, you'd be by yourself.
That's such a fact, yeah.
And that's, well, God. That's right. God's will.
That is God's will. Well, you know, Jim, you know, through our whole walk of life, you know, we go through this I don't know period. And we have to ask God for forgiveness, and we have to follow God's will. But the whole thing is that we are looking to move into the light, to become one with the light. And in order to do that, we have to go through many steps, particularly being here on earth with so many temptations that are constantly bombarding us and all the other situations, that we have to learn to renounce the things that hold us back, because we need to be connected to those higher beings of light and not let the false ones be the ones that guide us. And it's so easy to get tricked and trapped into situations. So we have to release ourselves from all of our emotional and mental ties that link us and anchor us into the material. And we have to realize that we need to let go of these selfish attachments, things that are very unfulfilling to us, that it's when our heart, mind, and soul focus on the light is when our soul can begin to move into a higher level of creation by understanding God's love and following God's will. But there are many things that are taught that have to be renounced.
But God also says, I mean, when God speaks, that's, we should listen. I mean, because really God spoke this. I mean, it was heard, and it became scripture. And oftentimes, it doesn't say any more than it has to. But how often do we actually really, you know, understand, you know, from going from the I don't know to the wisdom by applying the I don't know knowledge to becoming the understanding? And you'll find that those scriptures are very easy to understand. You know, when Christ died on the cross, his last words were, "Father, it is finished." What, do we really believe that? I mean, we're still living out there and worried about paying the rent and all the things that are tied to matter, to issues of matter. And, you know, the other thing God said was, "I am not in the dead, I am in the living." He said, "I am a God of the living." And so, you know, if you even look at it that way, I mean, if you are worried about how much firewood you're going to get, well, you know, those logs, God's not in. And even when the prophet was in the cave and the fire was, you know, flaring around the outside of the cave, God said to him, he said, "I'm not in the fire." And when the winds blew so hard that, you know, I mean, one would worry if they were going to survive, God said, "I am not in the wind." And I pondered that. I mean, God, forgive me, I don't know. But then came, you know, a wisdom, and then from there an understanding by applying things that took to the edge. And I realized that God wasn't in some of those things. God was in me, not in those things. And thank goodness, because, you know, I could tell those things didn't have my best interest at heart, you know, but yeah. God did. And so I began to realize that when I didn't know, by applying, and you must have movement in creation. There is no creation without movement. And with movement, you begin to have the wisdom and then the understanding. And you realize that, "Father, it is finished." What happened after that? 2,000 years ago, the false ones moved in, didn't they?
Yeah.
And they said, "You know what? In the absence of a God, we're the gods." And how quickly we believed it. And how quickly now, if you raise something up that you know, passed down from the great, 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 great grandfathers, they'll look at you and say, "Hey, that's the way it's always been." You know, and I can't tell you the number of times that I have heard those words. And they reinforce in me what you're saying, Sandy, is that the will of God, you know, and not what your grandfather or great-grandfather told you. I knew real early that my mom wanted me to make her life worth something. If I became something, then it made her life worth something. I was saying she was right, and that's what she wanted. She wanted those things for only that reason, you know, and she wanted to make sure I never took credit for any of them, but not because, you know, of ego, is because she wanted to take the credit. When I went with the vice president, her answer to me was, "Oh, you think you're a big shot now?" "No, I'm a white boy from West Virginia." And I have never forgotten that. But miraculous things have occurred. And she never once accepted them. You know, why? Because it didn't reinforce her version or vision of life.
Yeah.
Can you walk away from those things? Can we walk away from those things? Can we walk away from the people who will say, don't do it, just don't do it? You know, I mean, it's worked for us. It's worked for our grandparents, our grandparents before them. And you want to change it? Really? Who do you think you are?
Right. Well, we have to realize, too, that, you know, we have different patterns that we have to renounce, too. And sometimes when we don't like something, we're going to be grumbling about it or mumbling with discontent, you know. And this is something that we have to renounce.
Give me
some of them.
We want to carry the light. Give me some ideas.
Oh, well, somebody says something to you that you don't like, you immediately want to defend yourself. And, you know, you can't say that I can't do this, or you can't tell me I'm not good enough, or you can't do something that goes against my ideas, you know, and so you're grumbling about it. And
or how often do we do it, though? How often do we give in because we just don't want to really, you know, we don't like to have conflict.
That's
you know
true.
What? Avoiding conflict, I have found, only brings it back to you later, and it comes at you much bigger than it was the first time.
Right. You know, and then you have renouncing quarreling. I mean, everybody's quarreling. You know, no two people are going to think exactly alike. And there will be times where you're each going to try to have your own way. So you are going to have this quarreling going on.
And does it ever work?
It usually doesn't. You know, it doesn't end it well either way.
Right. Right. So the answer is follow God's will, right?
Follow God's will.
There's two sides. There's only two.
Right.
Most people think there are a million different possibilities. But in reality, there's only two ways. One's God's, the other one's the material aspect. If you go with God's will, He will supply you with those things you need. And otherwise, you will go with the false ones, and they will supply what you need and take most of it back, if not more.
Right. Yeah.
So give me some others.
Oh, well, how about arrogance and pride and vanity? How about these? You know, these are big ones.
They're still a hard one to get over, aren't they?
Oh, yes, they are. You know, and or slandering, you know, or even idle listening.
Well, slander, but you know what? We both, I think, learned early on, right, that slandering was not going to work for us. And I don't care what our parents did, and they may have done it at times, but I don't remember so much. But I knew that slandering early was not the way to go. I mean, because it didn't bother me that other people were different, you know, or that they thought differently. I have never been one who judged somebody because they thought differently, you know. But I didn't like the idea of being deceived or told that I couldn't be the same, too. I couldn't think the way I thought. I've had people stand in the church doorways when they saw me coming and say, oh, whoa, whoa, where are you going? I said, I'm going to church. They said, no, no. Well, we have heard that you went to a different church last week.
What?
You know, and it was like, well, I went with my grandmother to a Pentecostal church last week. That's right, you did. And we're not Pentecostal. And so, therefore, you're going to have to choose. Choose? Why should I have to choose? Why can't I go there 1 week and here next week? No, and it doesn't work that way. You know, and I thought, I was 12 years old at that time, you know, and I looked at her, and she just kept going, you know. And you went to another church, I hear, at one other time that we didn't know about. And I thought, I'm going to go to them all if you really want to know. I'm going to go to every church that exists so that I can see how they work and their doctrines, and I want to know.
Right.
And, well, she didn't like that at all. So I just went around her and into the church because that was what God told me to do.
Right.
You know, it wasn't that I was trying to be rebellious or teach her a lesson. It had nothing to do with it. And I have learned that when you're in God's will, you're not trying to do it out of ego. You're not trying to do it because I can. I was 12, you know, but I knew God from within, and that's where you find God. You want to find God, don't look out. Your eyes are worthless,
right.
Believe it or not. And I'm told that all the time. Your eyes are worthless. What they see doesn't exist.
Right.
What you want to know is existing. Use your ears to see, because your ears are, of the five senses, it is the most truthful. The rest of your senses are pretty much, you know, trying to trick you or in one way or another, show you something that is not really, you know, what it is, what you think it is, but your ears. Okay. So what else, Cindy? What are we trying to, you know, bring to people?
What we're trying to say here is that, you know, we understand that it's like, I don't know. Now we understand the wisdom that God's given us, and we're looking at raising our consciousness, growing into the light, becoming one with the light of God. But we have to let go of any emotional or mental baggage that we're having. We have to renounce those things, and that will lift us and allow us to enter into the kingdom of heaven.
And that's renouncing outward. I mean, saying it.
Yes, exactly.
Speaking it.
Exactly.
And renounce anything that's matter, because it doesn't matter. You know, it's funny, isn't it? It doesn't matter.
That's true.
And let God lead you and bring him within you and allow the Holy Trinity to take up your life and move you where you need to be and where you need to go, and you will find that there are many mansions awaiting us all if we can just do that. We want to invite everybody to keep listening to us. On Sundays at 5 to 6. And
Eastern
Time.
Yep. Yeah.
And our phone number, 304-567-3354 at the Living Life Center, a Church of Faith and Healing, and our show, Angel Talk, you know.
And we give thanks to BBS for allowing us to be part.
Yes.
Thank you, and God bless.
Absolutely. Amen and amen.